This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today, people from all over the United States and the world will watch as Donald J. Trump is sworn in as our nation's 45th president. What should we expect to see and hear on Inauguration Day? A political commentator will join us to explain the day and take us back to past inaugurations. We'll also talk with political leaders and lawmakers about their decision to attend the ceremony, and we'll ask them what they're expecting from the new administration. Throughout the hour, we want to hear from you, too. Are you looking forward to President Donald J. Trump? What campaign promises do you want to see fulfilled soon? And if you're not supportive of the new administration, will it spur you to become more involved politically on the local level? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WMPR.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, later in the hour, we're going to hear from some Connecticut residents who traveled down to D.C. to participate in tomorrow's Women's March. But first, I want to welcome our in-studio guest, Renny Folco. She's Associate Professor and Director of the Public Policy and Law Program at Trinity College. Renny, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
So just some quick thoughts on Inauguration Day.
Oh, I think this is going to be a very interesting day. I think this is a, you know, we are in, I think, a very tense time in America. And I think, if anything, I am hopeful that soon-to-be President Trump will deliver an address that will really try to bring people together. I think it's very important.
Now, on the phone with us now is U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut. He and other members of the Connecticut delegation are going to be at today's inauguration. We've heard more than 60-some members of Congress have decided to not attend today's ceremony. Senator Murphy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us about your decision to be there today.
You know, it wasn't a real hard decision. I respect the fact that some of my colleagues in the House don't want to be there, that they're very upset about the prospect of a Trump presidency. But, you know, listen, this is fairly miraculous that for 240 years we've been engaging in peaceful transitions of power when, you know, most countries around the world haven't been able to manage it. And so, you know, I'll be there as a sign of respect for the office, as a sign of respect for that transition. And, you know, I don't think there's anything mutually exclusive about attending an inauguration and then, you know, being committed to fighting the policies that I don't think are ultimately going to help Connecticut.
You've been vocal about some of the nominees in President-elect Trump's cabinet. Tell us about those reservations that you have.
Well, you know, I think in general, a new president, even of a different party, deserves some deference. So, you know, I'm going to vote for a number of his nominees. He'll have two of them likely voted on tonight that I will support, General Mattis and General Kelly, who will be going to the Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security. But, you know, if nominees are radical or they are woefully underprepared, then they're not going to get my vote. Somebody like Tom Price, who's going to HHS with the mission of dismantling healthcare for 400,000 Connecticut residents with no plan on what to replace it with. I can't support him. Somebody like Betsy DeVos, who came to our committee, she's the Secretary of Education nominee, who said that, you know, it's okay to have guns in schools. That's somebody that doesn't seem to square with Connecticut values. So, you know, I'm going to be voting for a number of his nominees, even if I disagree with them. But if they're radical or if they're, you know, really dangerous and underprepared, then they won't get my vote.
You're also introducing legislation alongside Oregon Senator Ron Wyden that will compel the president, if approved, to release his tax returns. Why bring that up now?
Well, because it's been a tradition that every single presidential candidate has adhered to. We never thought we needed to have a piece of legislation because, you know, for I think the last half century, everybody running for president disclosed their tax returns. And why? Because you want to make sure that every policy a president is pursuing is about what's best for the country in his or her belief, not what's best for their bottom line. And clearly, Donald Trump is hiding something in his taxes. I don't know how bad it is, if it's just embarrassing or if it's perhaps something that is absolutely disqualifying, but he clearly hasn't released them because there's something there, and there are huge questions right now about what his motivations are for running and for being president and whether he is going to use the office to enrich himself. So, this legislation, I wish it wasn't necessary. Every candidate, Republican and Democrat, has complied with this in the past, and it wouldn't just apply to Donald Trump. It would apply to everybody who's president or running for president. I think it's a pretty good standard to set regardless of party.
Renny Folco's here from Trinity College.
Yes, Senator, I'm just wondering, do you think you'll get any bipartisan support for that? I mean, it seems like such a common sense piece of legislation, but do you think there's any chance you can get some Republicans to join you?
I doubt it. We introduced this legislation last year as well and tried to get Republican support for it. You know, kind of quietly, a lot of Republicans told us that they were supportive, but nobody was willing to put their name on it. I think it's an interesting moment. You haven't seen a lot of public break from Trump, from Republicans. It looks like almost all of these nominees will get 52 votes from Republican senators. But I don't foreclose the possibility that there are going to be some major breaks between Republicans and Trump as time goes on. You know, on an issue like immigration, if he really is serious about building this this wall, if he's going to deport millions of kids out of this country as he's promised to, yeah, I think he'll have Republicans joining with us to say no to some of those very divisive, hateful, and really racist policies. So, no, I don't think we'll get Republicans on that piece of legislation, but I do think that we're going to have some opportunities for Republicans and Democrats to join together later on.
Good.
That would be comforting, I think, to a lot of people who worry about no checks and balances in Washington, Senator Murphy.
Yeah, I think this is a system designed for, you know, major radical change to be hard. I would have liked to have seen more Republicans standing up to him in these transitional days, but, you know, he's not president yet. And I think Democrats should be willing to work with him. I've said from the beginning that, you know, well, I haven't heard much from him that I can work with him on since the election. If he is going to try to make our trade policies more sensible, or if he is going to, try to take on big infrastructure projects, roads and rail building, then I'll be there with him. I'm not going to oppose everything just because he's Donald Trump. But when he's doing something that doesn't square with our values in Connecticut, then I'm going to join with whoever is available to try to fight him.
You know, Senator Murphy, before we let you go, you know, we hear often that Connecticut and states in the Northeast are kind of in this bubble where a lot of people that we may talk to have a sense of foreboding about what the next 4 years will bring. But there are a lot of people in this country who are looking forward to a Trump presidency. How do we get this country to be more unified?
Well, and I think, listen, in Connecticut, you still had 40% of the state. I mean, 4 out of every 10 Connecticut residents went into the voting booth and voted for Donald Trump. And so, you have to remember that, and you have to honor those choices. I think we've got some serious questions about how to make this place more functional. And I hope that Donald Trump, when he sort of talks about draining the swamp, pays attention to the rules of political construction that make cooperation difficult, things like how House districts are drawn to create very few swing districts, campaign finance rules that sort of force you to raise money from your political base left or right. If he really is serious about government reform, then, boy, he'll find support on both sides of the aisle. And those are the kind of things that, you know, ultimately can help make this place less partisan. They're things that I've believed in for a long time. I haven't heard him talk about any of that stuff. The drain the swamp rhetoric seems to be totally rhetorical right now. But I remain hopeful. I always remain hopeful. I don't think you can do this job. We can wake up every day and walk into Congress without having a glass half full perspective.
Well, I want to thank you, U.S. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, in Washington today to attend the inauguration of President-elect Donald J. Trump. Senator Murphy, thank you much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
And I want to go now to Connecticut GOP Chairman J.R. Romano. He's also in Washington to attend today's inauguration. J.R., can you hear me? Oh, J.R. Romano can hear us now?
I can. How are you guys?
We're well. So where are you right now in Washington?
I'm actually standing in front of about, it looks to be 10,000 people looking straight at me as I'm having this conversation with you, ready for a President Trump on this great day.
So as chair of the Republican Party here in Connecticut, we just heard Senator Murphy say, 40% of voters, they were supportive of Donald Trump. What will Connecticut Republicans want to see happen in these next 4 years?
Well, I found some of what Senator Murphy said constructive, but at the same time, when you lob in words about Republican policies or our stances on things being racist and things like that, it goes against the very fabric of trying to bring unity. And what's frustrating is when we talk about immigration reform, it doesn't make Republicans bigots. It's when we talk about other kinds of reforms, whether it's health care or any of these other things, Democrats immediately go to some disparaging comment about how we hate the poor, how we're going to do these terrible things. And this is why we are where we are. Mm. It's one of the reasons why nationally thousands rejected what the Democrats have created in this country. And I don't think the Democrats have quite accepted the fact that the policy that they've pushed over the last 8 years haven't worked, and we need to go in a different direction. And I love this comment about drain the swamp being hyperbole. Well, Democrats didn't have a problem when it was hope and change, right? So it's one of these things where you talk about wanting to come together and wanting to work, but the reality is when you lob in those comments where you're disparaging Republicans, and it's not going to work. Democrats have to learn to almost communicate better and be more accepting of different perspectives and ideas. And it doesn't come from a bad place.
Well, JR, wouldn't some of that also go back to what President-elect Donald J. Trump has said along the campaign trail? He has to own some of what he said, correct?
Well, but again, let me ask you a question. Along the border, I don't know if you've seen many of the studies because it's hard to have statistics, but they say 80% of women that sneak across that border are raped. Should we not do everything in our power to make sure that those women are protected and come into this country legally? Why don't we talk about the black market of drugs and sex trafficking that comes across that border? Shouldn't we stop that?
Well, JR,
But my point is, shouldn't we be focused on solutions that and have an open discussion about that?
Well, let's talk about what people in Connecticut want to learn about and see what Donald Trump will do in terms of the economy. Isn't that one of the number one issues?
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge sector in Connecticut where we lose GE, we're losing businesses. We need to rebuild this economy.
I've got a question.
That's Renny Folco.
Renny Folco, nice to meet you on the airwaves here. And so I'd like to ask you the same question that I earlier asked Senator Murphy. Where do you see opportunities for bipartisan cooperation going forward?
Well, I think we're going to need to have a bipartisan solution to the disaster that's been Obamacare. I recognize that Chris Murphy was a major player and is a big supporter of this legislation. But the reality is it's a failure for about 85% of the population that's involved.
Could I just follow up? I mean, what I would like to know is sort of what would be a plan that would allow Democrats and Republicans to come together to solve that problem?
Well, no. What I said is that the Democrats and Republicans, I know, will come together and try to solve this problem of Obamacare. Right. The original premise you asked me was, where do you see opportunity for them to come together? And I think that's one of them. Right. Because I think we can all agree that it needs reform.
OK, so I guess then the question is, how do you go about doing that? What would be the elements that would allow Democrats and Republicans to come together? How would you approach it?
I'll tell you right now, Republicans have no issue with pre-existing conditions. I think that's something that needs to stay. I think what we need to examine is the exchanges, some of the mandates with health insurance that is driving the cost up for so many Americans and their children and their families. But there's opportunity to come together and solve this problem. But again, I'm gonna bring back the fact that the rhetoric coming out of the left is so extreme in terms of treating who Republicans are. And it's hard to work with a group that is treating us so poorly and looking at us so poorly.
Well, JR, we can definitely agree that I think Americans are tired of the rhetoric and want to see bipartisanship in Washington, D.C. Again, you're there for the inauguration.
Yes.
What are some parting thoughts of what will be happening in the first 100 days?
Well, I am hoping I actually like the fact that some of these nominees are not of the system. Some could argue that the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. has been detrimental to development of business. So I think within the first 100 days, we're going to continue to see these nominees and take the head of these agencies and try to reshape how the government works and hopefully get leaner and meaner.
All right, J.R. Romano, again, chairman of the Connecticut GOP. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to take a quick call, and you can join the conversation today on where we live. What are you thinking about on Inauguration Day of Donald J. Trump? He'll take the oath of office at noon today. I want to take a quick call from Billy in Middletown, that number, 860-275-7266. Billy, you're on the show.
Hey, thank you for this opportunity. I was listening to the former person speaking, and it's so typical of Republicans. Us Democrats, it's time to mobilize and get off our butts and do the grassroots thing like the Republicans did and defend President Obama's record, because every other word out of the Republican mouth is still, even after Mr. Trump won, is denigrating the Democratic efforts. And to remind everybody that the day after President Obama took office, the Republicans got together and said, we are going to block everything that this man does. So anyway, I just wanted to remind people of that. And I pray for Donald Trump, but my hopes are kind of, I don't know. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Billy, for your call. Before we go to break, Renny Folco, any?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've had a interesting set of perspectives. And, you know, by the beginning of next week, it just seems to me the focus will shift from rhetoric, right, and so much focus on rhetoric, mm-hmm. to what's actually going to be done. And now for the first time, you know, in a long time, Republicans own both houses of Congress. Donald Trump will be the Republican president. And so I think the burden will really shift. And that's why I was kind of pushing on the question of how you're going to do it. What are the elements? In other words, I think that it won't be enough to simply criticize what happened before, but it will be necessary to really lay out some very concrete plans. And that at that point, you know, Americans will be able to judge what those solutions are to the problem.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, we're going to hear from local reporters. One will be calling us from the nation's capital. The other has been traveling throughout Connecticut, talking to you these past few weeks, asking residents about their expectations for President-elect Donald Trump's first term. We'll hear from them and take your calls after the break. The number 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WMPR.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. At noon today, Donald J. Trump will take the oath of office, become our nation's 45th president of the United States. Americans are split. Those that voted for him are glad to see this day come. Others, not so much. Now, in studio with me, Renny Folco, associate professor and director of the public policy and law program at Trinity College. And today we're taking your calls. What are your thoughts on Inauguration Day? The number 860-275-7266. Renny, if we could talk us through the ceremony today and what people, if they choose to watch, will be seeing.
Well, they will be seeing, as many people have described it in the last few days, the peaceful transfer of power. The Obamas will drive to the inauguration ceremony with President-elect Trump and his wife. They will appear together. President-elect Trump will take the oath of office before what I expect will be a very large crowd, and he will be sworn in as President of the United States. It's actually a very simple ceremony, and he will then give an inaugural address. And I think lots of people will be paying close attention to that address.
Now, in the past few days, there's been a lot of attention on members of the U.S. House, about things more than 65 that have said they're not going to attend as a form of protest. This isn't the first time we've seen protests on Inauguration Day. Take us back.
Right. So we know, for example, that when President Nixon was inaugurated, there were many people, members of Congress, who did not attend. And over the years, there have certainly been people who have not attended. I think what is different this time is how much attention has been focused on those. And I think, quite frankly, that was stimulated perhaps more than anything else by the, you know, back and forth last weekend with Representative John Lewis. Mm-hmm. I think that caused a lot of people who may not have been attending to kind of come out and make a statement of solidarity with Representative Lewis, among other things. So I think what's different this time is just how much media attention has been focused on those who are not attending. But it is not unheard of that people do not attend the inauguration.
And we look back at January 20th, 2001, when President George W. Bush, on his inauguration day, with all of the outcome after the election, the hanging chads.
Right.
I mean, people tend to forget what happened in the past. People weren't happy that day either.
Right. But I think the polarization is so acute right now that any event that occurs just not only gets attention, but also I think makes clear to people just how deep these divisions are. And so I think that's part of what we're dealing with now, which is why I said earlier it would be wonderful if President Trump, as he becomes President Trump, could really address the whole nation in a way that is inclusive.
We're going to take some phone calls in just a few moments, and I wanted to speak to a reporter from Connecticut who's in Washington right now. Lucy Gelman is a reporter for the New Haven Independent and host at WNHH. Lucy, can you hear me?
Hey, Lucy. How are you? Good morning.
I'm doing well. I've never actually spoken to someone with my name on the show, so I'm trying not to get confused here. So tell us when you arrived in Washington, D.C., and what are you seeing?
Sure. So I arrived last night due to traffic issues, probably around 3 a.m. And, you know, at 3 a.m. anywhere else, I think things are probably pretty quiet. Certainly they are in New Haven. But crews were out, police were out, members of the National Guard were out already blocking off streets, which I can tell you made it a pain to park. But there has definitely been a feeling of, I think, both excitement from Trump supporters and then sort of dread, but also a sense of, you know, self-gathering and willing people onward from protesters. And so this morning, one thing I did was I woke up early and just walked down 15th Street. And so, of course, you run into McPherson Square. And if I wasn't awake already, I had someone screaming into my ear with a megaphone, which woke me up. And people, I mean, people are I think, really scared for maybe what's going to come. But there are also a number of Trump supporters who are really proud to be in D.C.
And who will you be following as you're, you know, reporting down in Washington over the weekend? Is it primarily the Women's March on Saturday?
Yes. So there is a large contingent from Connecticut coming. There are 80 buses leaving from Connecticut around 1 a.m. on Saturday morning. And so I wanted to be here beforehand to kind of see women trickle in from all over the country, but especially from Connecticut, because that's our area of focus. And then to follow some of those women and really talk to them about what brought them to Washington. Because I think local protest, especially in New Haven, a majority minority sanctuary city, is something that we saw and I saw as a reporter, even under President Obama. But this is very different. I don't think I've ever known really a number of women. So we're talking, you know, maybe 50, 60 women from one community that I know and that I report on who have said, this is so important to me that I'm going to get on, a vehicle in the middle of the night and come down and march. And these are people sort of all generations. Some of them have trouble walking. And I find it both very inspiring, but I kind of want to dig a little deeper and see who's marching and sort of what issues they're giving voice to tomorrow.
Well, Lucy Gelman, again, reporter for the New Haven Independent and host of WNHH. She's in Washington, D.C. to cover the Women's March tomorrow. Later in the hour, we're going to hear from some Connecticut residents who have also traveled down to our nation's capital to participate. But, Lucy, thank you for your time, your observations, and I understand you may be on the Colin McEnroe Show on Monday to tell us more.
I think so. Thanks, Lucy. Have a great day.
You
too.
Good luck. Take care. And before we go to our next caller, Rennie, let's talk about how people, whether they are, whether they're supportive of this new administration or not, people are definitely more engaged, whether
yes.
it's politically or just in social issues. I mean, that's got to be a positive.
Yes. I mean, I think the fact that people are going, whether they are going in support or whether they are going in protest, is a good thing for democracy. And, you know, if you listen to any of President Obama's parting words, he had a couple of different occasions. I think that that's one of the things he was talking about, and I think that is bipartisan. I don't think that is simply something that is reserved for one party or the other. I think, and given what I do for a living, you know, teaching young college students, that's always my message. wherever you stand. Get involved, get engaged. It's yours. You are a citizen of this country. And I think that we are really seeing a resurgence of that right now. And it may be that we're seeing, you know, certainly there are people who are there to protest who perhaps in the past were not as involved. But I think also on the other side, you're going to have a lot of Trump supporters who may not have been involved in the past and feel galvanized. And I think that's a good thing for democracy.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We want to hear from you this hour, 860-275-7266. Now, another reporter that's been doing some great work these past few weeks is Kyle Constable with the Connecticut Mirror. He's been profiling residents around our state who voted either for Trump or not about what their expectations are for the next president. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lucy. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us about how you came up with this idea and how did you set about doing it?
So the thought was, how can we at the Mirror try to find new voices beyond what people are hearing from the talking heads and from the elected officials about the inauguration? We wanted to see what real folks on the ground were thinking about the inauguration and about the coming Trump presidency. So we picked out these five towns that we ran in the series this week, and we chose them because they all had big swings from the 2012 election results. Three of the towns voted very strongly or narrowly for President Obama, and then either swung, you know, narrowly to Trump or strongly over to Trump. And then on the flip side, we chose two towns that voted for Romney 4 years ago and switched over to Clinton this time around.
So what were some surprising observations when you spoke to residents? I know Darien was one of them.
Oh, absolutely. Darien was kind of a unique case because anybody who knows the state knows Darien is a very, very wealthy, very Republican town. It's a town that 4 years ago voted more than 65% for Romney, but this time around cast 53% of the vote for Clinton. And what we found was that a lot of those voters who flipped from Romney to Clinton this time around didn't want to talk on the record. They were either nervous that there would be some kind of repercussion from their employer who was a Trump supporter, or that there would be some kind of backlash from a family member or family members who supported Trump while they didn't. And so that was really interesting, I think.
You also profiled residents living in East Haven, a more working class town. You know, often we hear about the economy has, you know, been gaining positively, but there are many Americans in this country who feel like they still are behind, that they're not able to save and they don't know what their future, the future holds for them. These are the people that, you know, are looking for Donald J. Trump to turn the country around. What did people in East Haven tell you?
Absolutely. Well, the overwhelming majority of them all thought that Trump would be a Reagan-like figure, somebody who could push economic growth in ways that just hadn't been seen since that time in America's history, and who could really bring the country together in a way that they think Reagan was able to do. And that's what they're hoping for, because you have these strong undercurrents of a desire for job growth again, a desire for a stronger military. And quite frankly, there's still the undercurrent to address the issue of immigration and border security. Those are, I think, the three major issues for the folks living in those towns. East Haven, especially on immigration, you know, with New Haven next door, which is a sanctuary city, there's kind of been, I guess, a bit of a spillover into towns like East Haven, these suburban towns where the Hispanic and Latino communities are moving into these towns that just weren't used to it. And it's kind of created a conflict, would probably be the best way to put it. And so as people are learning to live together, it's messy. And part of that is this backlash. Some of these folks voted for Trump because they just want the communities that they grew up in to look like the communities that they grew up in.
Well, Kyle, again, Kyle Constable, reporter at Connecticut Mirror, ctmirror.org. I want you just to stay on the line. We're talking about East Haven. One of our callers is actually calling from East Haven. Robert, you're on the show. Robert, can you hear us? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's Robert from East Hampton.
Oh, East Hampton. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right.
I saw East H.
East Hampton. But I just wanted to make a comment that today I'm extremely excited. I'm very proud. I don't think I've been this excited about an election. I'm 55 years old, and I'm just excited about to see some drastic change in Washington. We've been through 8 years of slow growth, 2.1% growth in our country, worse since World War II. I think President Obama has done more than the Democrats for division and racial division. President Obama has, as a community leader, tactics to separate groups of people and to put them to at odds with each other, whether it's gay people or black, Latino. It's in globalization. He was for all globalization. That's turned out, NAFTA globalization has turned out to be a complete nightmare for our country. So I'm really hoping to see some real change. And I'm just proud to be a Republican today. I'm proud to bring in Donald Trump. I get upset. I know I listen to NPR and John Dankowski on the Wheelhouse the other day and a caller. It's so true. You know, it's one-sided commentary, and fill the room with some other views. I mean,
Robert, I'll just remind you, you're on the air right now telling us your views. But we thank you for listening and your comment today.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Take care. Renny Falco.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this is indicative of the situation that we're in, right? That I think it is very hard for people, even though they speak of bringing, you know, they would like to see Trump bring us together. I think we need to have somebody certainly in the office of president really attempting to do that. And I will simply go back to the point that during the campaign, you know, I think a point you made earlier, the rhetoric was so divisive. Specific groups were singled out. And I think it is incumbent on Trump, who will now be our president, to work on that. I think it has to come from the top.
And Kyle Constable is on the phone again from CT Mirror. So how will you be moving forward with this series and maybe following up with some of these voters that you've spoken with?
Well, that's just it. I want to keep having a conversation with people as we go down the road. The best part about this series is it kind of gives us a written record of expectations from Trump supporters and I guess a written record from those who are opposing him. And we can compare, you know, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, even further down the road to see if Trump is still meeting those expectations. And I'd love to keep talking to these folks and find out what's running through their heads. Is Trump the president they thought he was going to be, or has he let them down just like in some cases, you know, like folks from Ansonia that voted for President Obama 4 years ago and 8 years ago and switched to Trump? Has he let them down in the same way President Obama did?
All right. Well, Kyle Constable, again, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Great series. And we're going to tweet that out at Where We Live. We appreciate your time today, Kyle.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, we wanted to get a different perspective. We reached out to Ashley McCarr. She actually works with refugees in the state of Connecticut for IRIS, which is a refugee resettlement agency. Ashley, you're on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me to the conversation.
Now, we hear often that we stay in an echo chamber, right? So depending on if we're on Facebook or with our friends and family, we don't hear from people from differing viewpoints. You've got an interesting perspective. You're helping people who have come to this country, seeking another chance at life. What do they think of this administration coming in?
Well, of course, there is some fear because of a lot of the rhetoric of the campaign that we hope will not turn into policy. In terms of stopping Syrian refugees from coming to the U.S., there's certainly fear, and the greatest concern is for refugees who have come here but who have family members, parents, siblings, even spouses and children still living in the Middle East and Africa. So that is the greatest concern. But one thing that I have been surprised about is that there's not as much of a gloominess about what this means about America. Refugees really believe in America. And they love the fact that there is an election every 4 years, which is not something that's true in a lot of their countries. So there's a more, I would say, a more hopeful orientation towards America than a lot of, honestly, people who advocate for refugees and immigrants have right now.
And by working with them, has your perspective changed at all?
Honestly, refugees make me much more patriotic than I'm inclined to be, which is pretty remarkable.
And we've been hearing about people getting more involved with nonprofits, with their communities. Is IRIS seeing a lot of that coming to fruition?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was one day the week of the election, after the election, that we had more online donations than ever in our history. And we're having people calling from all over the state and all over the country, asking how they can support refugees. Something similar to this happened last November before, when 30 U.S. governors were saying they would not accept Syrian refugees, and IRIS resettled a family that was supposed to go to Indiana soon after Mike Pence made that announcement. And we were just bombarded with support in a wonderful way. So we are seeing that again now.
Well, Reni Folco's in studio with us. I think she wanted to respond.
Yeah, just quickly, I think this is another indicator of the kind of activism that is in front of us right now. And I think we're going to see it in lots of different places. Immigration rights is just one area.
Well, Ashley McCarr, again, works with refugees at IRIS in New Haven. She wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post. We're going to tweet out that link at Where We Live. Thank you so much, Ashley, for your perspective.
Thanks so much, Lucy.
And we want to hear from you, too, 860-275-7266. We're going to take one more call before the break. Steve's calling from West Haven. Steve, quickly.
Yeah, hi. Just quickly, I'm not sure if I heard this, but according to the New York Post, and I didn't read it myself, a very, very good friend just texted this to me, that Trump plans to privatize NPR, the whole NPR network. Don't want to be spreading fake news, but that's a world stopper right there. And my second comment, to all those who are upset with someone who wouldn't attend the inauguration today, and they go on, well, it's about the office, it's not about the man, you know, the president, it's about the presidency. I would say, well, if you attended a church and you realized that day the Antichrist was going to take the altar, would you go to service that day? And that's all I've got to say.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Before we head to break, Reni Folco, again, we're hearing from many different viewpoints today about what they think will happen in the next 4 years. But really, we don't really know. I think former Vice President Biden said it best. He was quoted as saying, it's like a Rubik's Cube trying to figure out this guy out, being President-elect Donald J. Trump.
Exactly. And I think, you know, given his unique qualifications and background, that is absolutely true. We have far less to go on. And I do think we will have to wait. We will have to wait and see. But I don't think we will have to wait and see that long. Because as I said earlier, now we're at the point where the rubber hits the road on policy, and there will be something more to respond to react to, and to try to understand.
Something coming up the next couple of weeks, we may hear from soon-to-be President Trump about his nominee to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. When I will be extremely interested. I'm actually teaching a senior seminar where that's going to be part of what we really focus on.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, we'll take more of your phone calls and hear from a couple of residents who traveled down to Washington, D.C., not for the inauguration, but for the Women's March happening tomorrow. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today, the nation and the world's attention is on the inauguration of Donald J. Trump. But thousands have also traveled to D.C. to protest his administration and stand up for rights for women and others. The Women's March happens tomorrow in Washington, D.C. Now, besides speaking up for the rights of women, marchers are there raising awareness on issues like reproductive rights, immigration reform, equal pay, universal health care, and gun control. The New York Times reports the march is, quote, expected to be the largest inauguration immigration-related protests in U.S. history. As we've said earlier in the hour, many Connecticut residents have traveled to D.C. to participate. Others are taking part in sister marches in places like Hartford. There are also solidarity marches planned around the world. Now, two women who will be in D.C. tomorrow are joining us by phone now. First, I'd like to go to Jill Maller Kesselman. She's a North Haven resident attending the Women's March on Washington tomorrow. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lucy.
Tell us about your decision to go down to D.C.
Well, I think after the election, I felt really very depressed and very helpless, and was one of those people who was talking about leading the country in a panic. And then within about 24 hours, I realized that this is my country, too, and that I want to stay and fight to keep it the great country that it already is. I became aware of this Women's March within 24 hours of the election. It became, as you know, it went completely viral and immediately signed up to go on it. And there were groups around the country that organized to make this possible. So I joined with the Women's March on Washington, Connecticut chapter, which was being organized by Sarah Raskin. So I just want to give a shout out to thank Sarah Raskin. So I'm going on a bus. That's leaving at 1:30.
1:30. Oh, wow. And so you're going to be down there. So what's your plan? So you're going to be marching. You're going to be talking with people from Connecticut, from other parts of the nation, just feeling this feeling of solidarity around many different issues. But the important thing is rights for all.
Yeah, I think definitely solidarity for many different issues, and I support all of the issues that this march represents. I think the two issues that are probably nearest and dearest to me are supporting women's reproductive rights, and I'm very concerned about the future of public education in this country. Mm.
And also on the phone with us, too, Poe Murray, chair of the Newtown Action Alliance. She's one of 25 organizers for the Connecticut chapter of the Women's March. She'll also be in D.C. on Saturday. Poe, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you're not down there yet?
I'm not down there yet. I'll be traveling at 1:30 a.m. with fellow Newtowners on two buses down to D.C. this evening.
And what's bringing you down to the Women's March?
Well, many reasons. We value justice and liberty and equality. And after the Sandy Hook tragedy, we were formed to end gun violence in this nation, and that's an issue that is very important to me. And, you know, I feel that the issues are all intersectional, and it affects all of us, and gun violence is a woman's issue. And I'm traveling down to take a stand, to ensure that we won't stay complacent and not silent, and march on behalf of, my three daughters, on behalf of my friends and mothers and sisters. And, because we don't share that vision of hate and intolerance that was spewed out during the election.
Now, both you and Jill, just one of many women that are heading down to Washington, are already there. Is this just the first step in terms of how you'll be active on the grassroots level? Jill, I'll start with you.
Yeah, for me, it absolutely is. I found, that just becoming more active than I've been in decades politically has really been an empowering experience for me and kind of brought me out of just the depths of despair and depression. So I had initially been invited to these secret Facebook groups that you hear about that were popping up on a local level, and went to a couple of meetings and have decided that the group that I really want to stay involved with is called Action Together Network Connecticut, which is led in New Haven County by Valerie Horsley, who's like another amazing powerhouse. I don't know how she does everything she's doing. So I want to become active with that. I've also just decided to, I'm going to be volunteering with IRIS, and decided to channel my financial contributions to organizations that I feel are really going to need the financial support, like Planned Parenthood and IRIS and NARAL and organizations that are really threatened right now. And also just, I think, in engaging more actively in just daily acts of kindness and being vigilant towards people who are being bullied, who are minorities, and standing up for them when you see this, not just being silent. I think, that's something that happens day to day. I mean, We were in the middle of renovating a house this summer. Most of the workers on our house were Latin Americans who were non-English speaking. And after the election, they were clearly in a panic. And I went to the house to just reassure them that not everybody felt like this, and that there were people who cared and who would support them, and that we supported them. And it's just, I think, every day just watching for situations where people are experiencing bigotry, and standing up against that makes a difference.
And Poe, you mentioned, you know, doing this on behalf of your daughters. You know, what's their take on this new administration? What are they feeling?
Well, you know, they cried like I did after the election day, but immediately, you know, we decided that we need to take action, and we've been taking action since the Sandy Hook tragedy. My daughters are quite involved in gun violence prevention as well. But, you know, the rhetoric from this election is really difficult and very personal. I am a minority immigrant woman, so I feel significantly insulted by what happened during the election, and my daughters feel the same way. But the march on Washington on Saturday is just the first step towards engaging more women and others in the state of Connecticut and around the nation to get involved and to take action. We have a saying at Newtown Action Alliance. It's called honor with action. Honoring without action is really not that effective. So, you know, I hope to use the resources that we have here and work with these amazing women that have been organizing in Connecticut to engage the Connecticut women and men to get involved and to take action to make sure that we move us forward and not backwards.
Well, I want to thank Poe Murray, chair of the Newtown Action Alliance, just one of 25 organizers for the Connecticut chapter of the Women's March. She and Jill Maller Kesselman, a North Haven resident, attending the Women's March tomorrow. They're both taking buses at 1:30 in the morning to get down there for the march. We thank you both for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
And I'll just go back to Rennie. We just have a couple of minutes. Again, we're hearing from people who they just feel motivated to act.
Yeah, and I'll say two things. First of all, shout out to Sarah Raskin. She is a professor of neuroscience at Trinity and one of the most active and engaged people I know. I think what we see here and what makes it different, you know, one of the questions I think you asked earlier is what makes it different, is that I think many people are responding to what they see as a full frontal attack on a variety of issues that intersect. Usually when there's a women's march, it's about reproductive rights, or it may be about, you know, equal pay. But if you listen to what the two women just said, they're talking about guns, reproductive rights, social justice, immigration. I would add to that, I know people who are going because of voting rights. And so I think what you see is a response that is big, because almost every issue that these people care about, they feel is under assault. And I think that is unusual. I think sometimes it's one issue or another. I think what you have here is all of it.
We'll take a quick call. George is calling. George, you're on the line, and we just have under a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I just wanted to make a statement that I had a T-shirt made up about a year ago, and on it it said Bushism, Clintonism, Obamanism, politicism. And on the back of the T-shirt was Don Trump truism. Personally, I believe that on the campaign trail, Don Trump has made a lot of issues here apparent that concern the state of affairs in this country.
George, can I ask, what's the one campaign promise that you want to see soon-to-be President Trump tackle first?
Well, bringing jobs back to USA.
First and foremost.
Pardon?
First and foremost, jobs.
Yeah, well, I mean, considering what's been going on in the last 20 years, industry is not in this country like it used to be. Mm-hmm. And that's why economically we're kind of in the throes of, you know, trying to make it. Mm-hmm. And the workforce there's no real middle class anymore. That's the working class people.
Well, George, we thank you for listening and for your comments. So, again, we're hearing from listeners who want to see the economy. And we know the economy has been gaining, but they want to see more. They want to see jobs come back to America, one of Donald Trump's big promises. Right.
And I think that's the promise he will be held to most of all his promises.
I want to thank Renny Folco, Associate Professor, Director of the Public Policy and Law Program at Trinity College. The hour always goes quickly. We do appreciate having your perspective on today.
My pleasure.
Our show is produced by Lydia Brown and Jeff Tyson and Kion Wolf, Katie Tolarski. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.